This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Hey, all cheaters, welcome to the Always Cheating Podcast. My name is Josh, and I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
Josh, welcome to the first episode of Always Cheating in the post-Mesut Ozil Premier League era. Yeah. It's changed. I don't know if you can sense it, but I sense it. Everything has changed today.
Yeah, shifting in the force. Yeah, I do. Yeah, the nexus of power of European football has moved to Fenerbahce, hasn't it?
Yeah. So this week we've got yet another deadline. It's like all we do anymore, Josh, is just talk about COVID and game week deadlines. We've got a game week deadline for game week 20 on Tuesday. Time is precious, but we've basically been dealing with game week 19 for what feels like forever now. So yeah, should we just put a little button on that?
Yeah, let's put a little button on that and just, you know, in line with that, like, can you believe that the season's only halfway done? Like halfway, and for some, like, yeah, it's crazy.
For some teams haven't even played their 18th or 19th fixture. So yeah, it's like, like as far as FPL is concerned, it's halfway through. But some of these teams aren't even close to being halfway through yet, which is, it boggles the mind. January is almost over.
This is a great season for endurance, Brandon. I think that by the end, it's just going to be... the people listening to this podcast would be the last people still playing fantasy. Although I will say there's nothing like a massive double game week, a double game week that really delivers to get people excited again, to get people checked in, to get people focused on the second half of the season. You had one of those. I didn't.
Yeah.
But that, you know, less about that said, the better. Let's talk about your game week. You bench boosted. You talked about a little bit on last week's pod. So, you know, we don't need to go through the whole thing again, but it sort of just went from strength to strength for you, right?
Yeah, it did. And I really, really, really did need a big week because my season has just kind of been, even though I've been hitting green arrows, I was waiting for some sort of transformational week. And game week 19 was that. Played the bench boost, and ultimately what got me there was this realization of Edward Mendy was my GK, and he was doing nothing for me. I needed to get rid of him. So with the mind of just holding on to Mendy for game week 19 and him soon being gone, I could stomach putting him on the bench and spending -4 to get Ederson in my goal. And that was really what flipped that bench boost switch for me. So I think if my big takeaway from game week 19 was anything, it's just how goalkeepers are kind of overlooked or seen as a nuisance when it comes to the bench boost chip. And between Mendy and Ederson, that's 21 points, and it was huge. And I think, let's see, if you tabulate everyone on my bench, it's 28 points with a -4. So net 24 from a bench boost. Total points, 133. I broke into the top 500K overall. Yeah. So I was just kind of like stuck in the doldrums of million ranks for quite a long time. And now I'm right back there in reach of the big dogs. Very close in that Villa Newcastle match to breaking into the top 400K. But there are bigger things to come for me, Josh. I know.
That's right. From 3.6 million overall in game week 8. And that would not have been a good season for you, right? If you finished 3.6 million, you would not have been happy.
Fair to say.
So from 3.6 million in game week 8 to 403,000 overall. So yeah, I mean, that's 3.2 million managers that you've leaped over. And even if Brandon, we say that, you know, a million of those, a full million have given up, and the season's just been too messy, too crazy. There are still 2.2 million of those managers, Brandon, that are trying their best, and you leapfrogged 2.2 million of them. So congrats to you. We talked about it a little on last week's podcast. So, and then, you know, bringing in, you know, Watkins and Target, you know, on Saturday really came through as well.
Yeah, I was kicking myself, certainly not jumping on the Antonio train. Because I went Watkins over Antonio, and I got cold feet about Antonio's injury past and all of that. Though you could clearly see West Ham's fixtures were terrific. So Watkins getting just the return that he got, 6 points, you know, we'll take it against Newcastle, was food for me. And Matt Target, hilarious. Like, everyone was kind of freaking out ahead of the game week 19 deadline that Snoops out there in the FPL dark alleyways found Matt Target's own FPL team and saw that he had transferred himself out to bring in Andy Robertson. So everyone was like, well, Target definitely has COVID, or he knows something that we don't. And here he is with 18 points. So the egg is on your face, Matt Target, your face.
Hey, listen, it's possible he did have it. For the record.
True,
And he, like the movie Rookie of the Year, Brandon, he emerged stronger for it. You know, it's somehow he fused that. You know what happened to Rookie of the Year? He fuses his forearm and suddenly he can throw those balls really fast.
It wasn't Magic Shoes or something like that? I'm
thinking of either Little Big League or Rookie of the Year. The two, they came out very close to each other.
It sounds more like RoboCop to me, the way you're talking about things being fused to people's arms. I don't know, but yeah. Matt Target certainly doesn't look like he's capable of shaking down some creeps on the streets of Detroit.
Now, 18 points for him in the game week. He ended up being my high scorer in the game week. And, you know, for me, I mean, I finished on 89, and it was looking much worse going into that match. But Martinez, Target, and Watkins all came through, picked up 24 points from that final match. And it was a really less than ideal game week for me. Just lots of 50-50 calls, at least 50-50 in my head that went wrong. Going Vardy over Antonio, which now is sort of compounded by Vardy being injured. And then not getting a Man City defender, which I just kind of I just gambled that that they would only keep one clean sheet, that even if John Stones played. My thinking was, like, if John Stones plays twice, you know, he is not traditionally, until this game week, been a goal threat virtually ever for Man City. And so I'm thinking, all right, you know, they're going to score some goals in these matches. He's probably going to be on, you know, 6 points in one. And let's say they just concede a goal in one of those matches. So he was on 8 total to bring him in after burn 4. So, you know, I'm looking at a 4-point return from him. And I also would have had to bench someone like Patrick Bamford to do it. And I thought, well, I'll just gamble that Bamford can score and roughly equal what I would get for someone like John Stones if I, you know, brought him in on a hit. So, you know, and so of course Bamford blanks and John Stones ends up with like 72 points in the game week or whatever.
Let me tell you this. I'm looking at my great game week score. I'm going to run through some player scores. I've got one player with 12 points, 18 points, another 18 points, 13 points, 14 points. Points. Those are all defenders and one goalkeeper. Not a single midfielder or forward for me got into the double digits. It was a spectacular week for defenders. And
it really was.
It's one that, like, particularly for more aggressive managers like yourself, Josh, it's the last place you tend to want to put your faith.
Yeah, and it's just interesting. I mean, I have this opening topic here, which I'm just going to pull up, and I do want to do the top 10 for the Argentine Super League in a second because we haven't done that in a while. But just, you know, did anything that happened in game week 19 change your thinking about this season? Now, there's a couple of different ways you could take that question, but do you feel like we learned anything about the Premier League season based on these matches, based on the last couple of, you know, 18 and 19, you can group them both together maybe. Like, did we learn anything about the squads or players that we want or don't want? I mean, what, you know, do you feel like you learned anything from those matches?
Well, I think the it was a prevailing opinion going into the game week, but 19 100% solidified the fact that Manchester City have an elite world-class defense on their hands suddenly, seemingly out of nowhere. And, you know, take John Stones' goals away from him. Still, he and Ruben Dias in the center of that defense are just elite at this point. And maybe you're rotating the fullbacks, but still, City look like they're going to walk the league at this point. And we have to talk quite a bit about Kevin.
Man United may beg to differ, but, you know.
Okay, yeah, and that's fine. And that's fine. And I don't mean to throw shade at Manchester United, but I do think that the odds are three months from now, you'll be looking at City with probably something like a 10-point lead. And, you know, we're going to have to talk a little bit about Kevin De Bruyne and what his injury, how that will impact things going forward. But if game week 19 will be remembered, it's that the defenses in the Premier League are really coming together and coming into their own.
Yeah.
And I guess this is, you see this in most seasons where teams just have kind of been found out and they get a little more touchy. Like, where are the 7-goal matches that we were used to seeing in the first 10 to 15 game weeks? They're not happening anymore.
Yeah.
So the games are getting tighter. The defenses are getting better. The goal scorers are having to capitalize to an even greater degree just to get those returns.
I'm totally with you on the Man City question. I mean, if you had asked me this question, that would have been my answer. And just to throw one other thing in there, I think that I have this game week and the way it worked out has maybe opened me up to be a little more open to hits this season, at least. I feel like there's something about these matches that are played without any fans that it just leads to some really hot, like just some massive returns from players. You know, I can't remember ever seeing a season where you were just consistently getting these like 10 to 20 point returns from various players. You know, I mean, even if Stones doesn't get the clean sheet in the second match they play, he would have been on 21 points. You know, I mean, it's just, it feels like Grealish has had a couple like that. Son certainly has. It's just, you know, it feels like there's something about the upside that you might get from being a little more aggressive this season and risking a player, even a defender or an attacker for that matter. It just, you know, any like aggression with your transfers, aggression with your 4-point hits does seem to be paying off this year. And I don't know that I have like a specific player that I can like point to is like, I'm going to sort of target them moving forward. But it does feel like there's like when a team gets hot right now, it seems like they get really molten hot, you know,
and Leicester City being a great example of that. Right.
Yeah. And there's something about, you know, and maybe that like those hot streaks would end more quickly if there were fans in the stands and suddenly, you know, Man City goes away to Norwich and just loses 3-2 kind of flukily. Right. Cause like it's a bit like that Fulham Liverpool match, right? The one, I think it might've been like the final, one of the final matches where there were fans in the stands this season. And you know, just that, like the fans willed Fulham to a point in that match.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
And it kind of ended Liverpool's hot streak. I mean, I guess they had that Crystal Palace match after that, but it felt like Liverpool were kind of rolling. And then that Fulham match just sort of, you know, messed with their confidence or something a little bit.
It may have. You just got me thinking about the difference between having fans in the stands and having Teemu Pukki on your team. So Man City versus Norwich, you know, I don't think we have the full science there on whether it's Pukki or the fans. We need more data.
Yeah. So we'll crunch the numbers of some of our more standard inclined people, and they'll solve the Pukki versus people debate once and for all. Uh-huh. Yep. So always cheating Super League. I'll read off the top 10 here. We've got this is a Russian name that I properly can't pronounce, Brandon.
I want you to try.
Yeah. Hukana Yaya Pen. Hukana Yaya Pen. I'm not even sure if those letters are in English, to be quite honest with you, Brandon. So I really don't want to be offensive.
There is definitely a Russian alphabet situation happening here. And you know what? People want to kill us for our pronunciations, but just like whole different alphabets. You've got to cut us some slack on that.
Yeah, especially the Russian alphabet, which looks like English. Coolest Son, Edie Marzouk in ninth, Matt Hammond in eighth, Heinrich Wickman in seventh, Neil Head in sixth, Wallace Clark in fifth, Joachim DeLong in fourth, Tomas Wiegren in third, Daniel Magari in second, and Matt Carvel. Simple name, Matt
Easy.
Carvel.
Okay. no diacritic marks happening at all.
Cancelo Culture is in first place overall. 1,322 points for Matt Carvel.
I'm looking at his team right now, and his OR is 70. Matt is 70 in the world right now, is incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, that's better than us. So congrats to Matt. Brandon, just while we're doing it, quick shout out to our patrons. We have some new patrons this week. Luke Meyer, Magnus Heinrichsen Chell, and Phil Morgan. Thank you to our newest Patreon supporters. Thank you to everyone who supports the podcast. And thank you to everyone who listened to this week's Kitchen Table podcast and had to hear me just go on. Like, I haven't done a classic Josh rant on this week's on the main feed podcast in a while. Yeah. But if you want like the straight,
uncut,
like, uncut self-pity, you know, that really that's where you're going to go for that.
It's always cheating Snyder cut that was happening. Josh pre getting his 24 points from Aston Villa, Newcastle. Things are fine.
So it always works with me. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm 57K overall, or I guess I'm 58K. I was at 33K going into game week 19. I dropped back to 58K. I really can't be complaining too much. I mean, especially given all these scores that are in the hundreds, 9 out of 10 people in the top 10 in the league were in the 100 scores, and I didn't burn a chip. So I still have my triple captain, wild card, and bench boost left to play. Just the way my team was set up, it didn't make sense to use any of those chips, and I didn't feel good about the triple captain because I just didn't know how to throw it.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
And Brandon, do you want to say just a quick thing about why people should become a Patreon supporter?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. If you just like what you hear from us week to week on the free pod and you want more FPL content, you want more FPL pods, just like you're saying, Josh, we do a second podcast every week for our Patreon supporters. You also get access to our Slack where you can have conversations with us and hundreds of other really great fantasy managers, whether it's about fantasy, movies, TV, cheese, whatnot. Also, at the higher tiers, you can get swag like our Make Fantasy Fun Again t-shirt. So to get more information, visit us at patreon.com/always cheating. There's a tier that's right for you.
Yeah. And thank you to FPL Ant on the Always Cheating Slack, who basically laid out what a wild card would look like for me, like move by move across the board. It was quite impressive, actually. And it was like, wow, like this is some really thoughtful stuff happening in our Slack, Brandon. So I'm not even necessarily thinking about a wild card, especially with the Tuesday turnaround here. But I like the energy and the approach. So patreon.com/always cheating is where you can go. I think it's really the nicest community as well in fantasy. I love being on there. Yeah. Everyone's great. So all right, take a quick break and we're going to talk about game week 20.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Maybe your fantasy team is distracting you from other important parts of your life. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and you can start communicating in less than 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. And there's a broad range of expertise available, expertise that may not be locally available in many areas. and BetterHelp is worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor, and you'll get timely, thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room again. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, and they can make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. So visit betterhelp.com/cheating. That's better, H-E-L-P, and join the more than 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. And here's a special offer for Always Cheating listeners. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/cheating.
All right, Brian, we're back. Game week 20 kicks off on Tuesday. We have some games on at the same time this week, Brian. You know, I love a game on at the same time.
I know. We, even though we don't get the NBC Goal Rush anymore, which was great, where you do like the, what do you call it? What's the broadcast term? Yeah, you're just like switching from match to match depending on where the action is.
Yeah, whatever that's called. It's like what Red Zone, right? That's what they call the NFL version of it here.
Yeah. But it's going to be awesome. I mean, we're just basically clearing fixtures off of the Premier League schedule. It's like sometimes my boss will say to me, you know, like it's an assembly line. Like sometimes you don't have to worry too much about the quality. Let's just get it done. The Premier League is just getting it done right now, regardless of the quality.
Yeah, it's impressive. They're putting in a shift. You know, they really are. I cannot believe how many matches are coming up. It's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I think Friday is a short break. I'm going to quickly go to my calendar here. Yeah, so
pull it
quick,
up. Yep.
Quick break on Friday. And then we've got matches on Saturday and Sunday. And that we may actually see the return of the Goal Rush, Brennan, because I think there's three matches on at the same time on Saturday. And then again, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, we have another set of matches. That's February 2nd through the 4th. And then Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we have yet another set of matches. So we were just talking about how we are only, you know, halfway through the season. We're going to be two-thirds of the way through the season very quickly.
Yeah, right.
Like within you know, just a month or so. We're really going to blast through these fixtures. So I think there's a lot of edge to be gained here for people who are paying a lot of attention, certainly.
Yeah.
I also think that in some ways, it'll be like the summer a little bit where you have matches on all the time. And so the one thing I really remember from the summer is I felt like I was really sweating the results too much. And there were so many matches on. It was like, it was too emotional. So I think that, you know, if you take this game a little too seriously, and one thing we actually talked about on this week's Kitchen Table Pod is like, why wouldn't you take it seriously? Like, what else are you doing with your time? Most of you out there, you know, myself included, like how can you, it's hard not to right now. There's not a lot going on. I can't like go to like a bar and catch up with old friends. Right. So like, of course I'm going to spend more time tinkering with my, you know, game week 20 team or whatever. But yeah, if you can, you know, keep the emotions in check, because if you have a bad day or a bad game week, the next one's going to kick off like 48 hours later. So there's always a chance to redeem yourself.
So I'm looking at the fixtures here for game week 20, and three fixtures jump out at me. The first one is the last fixture, which is Spurs-Liverpool, and that feels bad for FPL, mostly because I can't predict what's going to happen in that match, and that's generally not a good thing for fantasy. The other two are the Manchester clubs, Man City away West Brom on Tuesday, and on Wednesday, it's Manchester United hosting Sheffield United. So those are the complete opposite of Spurs-Liverpool. You can predict that City wins, City beats the crap out of West Brom, and that Manchester United beats the crap out of Sheffield United. However, I've got a situation. We don't know who the attacking assets are for Manchester City that we want. So is it all about their defense? And would you go so far as to captain Mr. John Stones? But it's going to basically be we're leading all fantasy managers toward Bruno Fernandes this week, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, captain-wise, I think if you're a a conventional manager or having a reasonably good season, or like there's a certain kind of manager out there, and you know, who just wants to be different, right? And just the like the very act of someone being the most popular manager means that they don't want to go with them. I mean, I sort of have this compulsion myself, right? I mean, it's like Mo Salah scores a brace today, I'm like, maybe Salah away to Spurs. Yeah. But I think, yeah, I mean, Bruno was just rested. Sheffield United are not good. Sheffield United have some teams have struggled to play at Sheffield United, but I think Man United at home, given their incredible form, given how poor Sheffield United are, and how poor Ramsdale is for that matter. Yeah. I think Bruno is the obvious pick. The one thing about Man United, and this sort of gets right into the first, let's rattle off a question here, Brandon. Okay.
Let's riff away, man.
Let's go for it. Andrew Cyril says, last year you talked about players being swords and shields. And this is a shout out to this guy, Racer5 on Twitter, who had this sort of popular idea about the sword pick and the shield pick. The shield pick is the highly owned player that you have to basically like protect your rank, right?
Yeah.
Because if they go off and you don't have them, it can really hurt you. And sure. the sword pick is the pick that you need to make sure that you can stand out a little bit, right? Because the highly owned players tend to be pretty expensive. So, you know, you need to find some spots, you know, where you can sort of have some players who will help you pick up some ground. So Andrew Searles says, maybe it's just my mini league, but it feels very hard to find a good sword type this season. With the pool of premiums who are actually performing so small, how are we supposed to gain ground on the league leaders?
This is such a good question. I agree, Andrew. The premium players, like with the drought that Salah is in at the moment, with KDB injured, Aubameyang's not performing, Vardy is now injured, Kane and Son are at least around that 50% ownership mark, so they're more shields than anything else. So this is something that I think you've been especially good at this season, Josh, is where do you put the captaincy? And is this season, as far as swords and shields are concerned, less about players and more about strategy being captaincy and chip play? So I think that is something that we can think about, particularly in a week like this where you're saying, well, the obvious armband is Bruno Fernandes. That's an opportunity for you to use your captaincy as a sword and maybe go for Patrick Bamford or Mikel Antonio, something like that.
Yeah, I think you really have to pick your spots with the captaincy. I think going without a rested Bruno is a tricky one. I think it is tricky with players, and you know, I mean, okay, I have two thoughts here, and they're not even about specifically about players themselves. But the first thought is that I think that I have been a little stubborn about formations this season. And I think that, you know, Brandon, you were just talking about how it was the defense that really came through for you in game week 19. And I think that I am ready to start. I'm ready to start considering thinking okay. about being this more is... serious about a 4-4-2.
We accept you, Josh.
Exactly. A 4-3-3 possibly. A lot of us have Souček in our team. He's kind of a nice rotating midfielder. I don't think you need to necessarily start Souček every match, though. So a 4-3-3 or a 4-4-2 is something that we talked a lot about at the start of the season. And then the defense was pretty disappointing at the start of the year, kind of across the board.
Totally.
But I think the combination of Man City looking so good right now that it really does seem to make a lot of sense to just have Diaz and Stones. Right. And just start them every week. Yeah. It makes sense to have those two. But there are so many other viable defenders out there that are worth considering. I mean, you know, both of us have them on our team. I mean, Matt Target, I mean, Aston Villa are keeping clean sheets against, you know, every team that's like 10th place or down cannot score on them. Right. They are just like shutting down every squad they play that does not have like a world class defender. And even Man City, they really acquitted themselves well until like the 75th minute or something.
Sure.
Like
barring a Tyrone Mings blunder. And, you know, I understand people are divided between that offside call where Mings got tackled. But Emmy Martinez is, yeah, like the most informed goalkeeper in the league, has been all season. And Matt Target, he was in beast mode against Newcastle. He was incredible. So I totally agree. Like, Villa's defense is legit. And then on top of that, West Ham, it's like there are West Ham, their defense is compelling. And then you get into this territory of, yeah, but the price. So there's so many different ways to spend in your defense. And I think there are some really good cheap teams like West Ham that allow you to get really creative all in all other areas of your team.
Yeah. I mean, there's just a lot of good cheap assets. Leeds, Aston Villa, West Ham, like those alone, right? You could just sort of load up your midfield and
yeah. Tariq Mitchell too. I mean, Palace, right? They struggle against the really top opposition. I think they've looked defensively a bit more solid since Mitchell got back into the lineup. Shock and surprise. But there you go. Is he still 3.9? Just incredibly cheap for a solid defense with a good fixture.
So I think that formation is one thing to think about. I think the other thing to think about is just like a mental game you've got to play, which is every time we do the sword and shield thing, I like start to belabor it to the point where like loses all comprehension. But basically, a sword turns into a shield very quickly. Right. Mm-hmm. Patrick Bamford, when I bought him in, was a sword for about 4 weeks. Right. And then sort of in my ranking tier, he was suddenly 85% out. Right. Mm-hmm. So the whole way to think about it is not who is no one thinking about. It's, you know, who is out there that is going to be highly owned soon and can I get to them first? And maybe that's easy to say, but I actually think it's not. It's like a thing that can be done. And I think that people who are really good at fantasy consistently are really good at that, at sort of assessing who the breakout players are. And
how about this? Yeah. What if we, instead of it being a sword, it's like the battle royale scenario. Is this how it works in the Hunger Games? Or there are movies battle where people royale? Get dropped into the middle of nowhere and there's a pile of weapons in the middle of the open field. And you just have to run to the pile of weapons. That's kind of what a sword pick is in a way. You have to be the first one to get to the crossbow and shoot your opponents with it. And then you have to quickly move on to plan B because somebody else got, what the other weapon. So
yeah, I think in Battle Royale, it's really skewed. It's like one person gets a gun and then one person gets a stick. You know, it's pretty unfair.
Yeah. So there are degrees of swords here, I think, is what we're saying. There are.
All right. So next question's from Savage FPL. He says, I have Vardy and KDB, so help, basically. I do too, Brandon. And so I have Vardy, I have KDB, I have Charlie Taylor, who's battled an injury, but I probably wouldn't have started him anyway. And I don't have a Man City defender. So I have I have one transfer. So I feel like what I have is I have three problems to solve with one transfer. And the question is, can some of those problems be solved later? And, you know, I wish that Liverpool and Spurs weren't playing each other this week because it would make it very easy. I just go Son and Kane. I mean, I might go Gundogan and Kane, but even still, taking Kane for a hit. I mean, I don't know. Liverpool just conceded three goals. I mean, what is going on with them? It's
unclear, Josh. We are not going to solve that mystery.
No, exactly. Yeah, we got a question from our friend Eric Freeman about that. He's like, can you is there a way to figure out what's happening with Liverpool? And I mean, the answer is no. Jonathan Wilson, the best minds in football, Brandon, are trying to tackle this problem each week in articles on podcasts. I mean, it's a very tricky thing to answer.
It's I'm here for the argument that it's them missing Virgil van Dijk and it's a trickle down thing. But you can point to numerous matches this season where they have annihilated opposition, scoring upwards of seven goals. So while overcoming that problem, but to have a run like they're having now defies explanation.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that Reese Williams didn't get subbed at some point in that match. I mean, the center back problem is real. Like, yeah. You know, and obviously the knock-on effect there. I mean, we saw it with Man City last season, right? You know, it's actually exactly the same situation where Fabinho is doing what Fernandinho did last season, right? Like,
correct.
Yeah. He's fine, but then you don't have Fabinho and Fernandinho as your defensive midfielders, right?
Yeah, like, right.
And Fabinho, by the end of last season, you know, kind of that year run between winning the Champions League and winning the league title. I mean, probably like the best defensive midfielder in the world, right? I mean, like top five, like he was amazing. So, I think that is a big issue, but, Salah's scoring twice. I have to say, I don't love the new version of Salah where he, scores and then scowls and doesn't celebrate. I'm like, like, I've always thought he was such a joyous person. And it's like, it cannot just be because, like, does he really want out in the middle of a season? Like, it's like, because he didn't get captained in a meaningless Champions League tie or something. Like, I don't understand what's going on with him.
He does. I don't know. I don't know the man. But through my television set, I feel that he's like seems like a prideful individual. And he is already... He just feels like a guy who's already in his mind on to the next thing, and it's not what's happening at Liverpool.
I know, and I guess it's like it's good to remember these guys are like 20, you know, like, I don't know, they're like, these are not like 55-year-old, you know, like marketing directors or whatever who've like, you know, gone through the ringer career-wise, you know. It's like they're just like, he's a young guy, you know, he's won everything you can win basically at Liverpool, and
he's also,
his head's getting a little turned.
He's from Egypt. He's not, you know, a young Liverpudlian like Steven Gerrard. He has, even though I'm sure Liverpool as a city have treated him as well as they could have, and I'm sure he loves the club and all that. Like, he's a bit of a mercenary, and he wants, if he has goals as a professional, it's to go play for the top clubs wherever they may be, whether it's Spain or Italy or elsewhere in England. So I can imagine he's ready to challenge himself in new and different ways. He's already achieved everything that was set out for him at Liverpool.
It wasn't this what Alex Ferguson always did, right? It was like, he was just constantly moving, you know, I mean, outside of the kind of the absolute core players, it was just constantly rotating these players around, right? You know, just like waiting until they're kind of sell by date. And I mean, I'm not saying that Salah's like done by any means, but just like if he's not all in, then you know, maybe he does have to get moved. So what a grim thought. I love Salah. I don't want him to leave, but it's just,
well, maybe they replace him with somebody like Mbappe, you know, just as the phrase you used earlier, Josh, strength to strength. There's no reason why we can't do that.
So, yeah, the KDB question, let's take them separately. The KDB question, I think that KDB to Gundogan is a really easy move that is kind of getting like a little, like it's like one of those moves that like, be like move from like good idea to cliche so quickly, like at least among the kind of FPL sphere where I'm spending most of my days, that it's like, you know, sometimes it's like something so obvious that people start to like find ways to not do it, you know. Yeah. But he's in the form of his, you know, career at you know, Man City. At least he has been playing in the David Silva role, pretty like the only one who's been able to do it consistently well so far this season. He is on pens, and they're about to play a bunch of bad teams, so that sounds very appealing to me. And he's got 3 double digit returns so far in the season, and he is available for three, and he's available for 5.5 million, and his ownership is 6.5%, and they're about to play West Brom. Like, not only do I want him in my team, I'm thinking about captaining him this game week.
Wow.
You know, like, I mean, I'm not going to do it, but, but
I will say rested,
you know, at the weekend.
Yeah. Just to stop you right there, in one of our mini leagues, somebody did captain Gundogan in game week 19. And let's see. So, and that was 18 points, doubled 36 points.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want to scoff at that immediately. A little creative thinking, and that can pay off for you.
Yeah. I mean, low ownership player, Who's going to be asked to fill their creative midfield role for a good team. And they play West Brom, Sheffield United, and Burnley in their next three. You know, there's just there. Even if you don't see him as like the player you want for the next 20 weeks, he's extremely appealing for the next three. And it just opens up so much more money to spend around your team. And so, it, you know, the question, you know, so I think that that puts him over the edge as far as Gundogan versus Son is concerned. You know, you could throw Foden in there as well. But the problem with Foden is he has played a ton of minutes recently. So that does start to worry me a little bit. He's still, it's not ever a given that he's going to start either. I mean, he only got 30 minutes in the Crystal Palace match in the first, half of game week 19. I mean, he has looked so good at times, but he is a little inconsistent starter wise. And he's more expensive than Gundogan. So I think there's just, Gundogan is just like a really easy player, I think, to solve a lot of your problems. And they don't play Liverpool. Like Liverpool's defense may not be like the hottest, but like, would it shock you if they kept a clean sheet away to Spurs? It wouldn't shock me.
No, certainly not. It was the best team didn't win situation with Jose Mourinho last time they met. Was it a 2-1 scoreline?
Yeah, sometime like early December, right? I kind of remember.
2-1, yeah, 2-1 Liverpool. Yeah. You had a goal from Firmino and Salah, and then Son scoring the lone Spurs goal.
So I think that Gundogan versus Son versus Foden, that's where I'm almost in my head. De Bruyne to Gundogan is just a move I'm going to make this game week. That is what's one move that's going to happen. So then the question is, do I fix Vardy this week? Or do I just make a move and just spend my transfer right now, bringing in a Man City defender, and just go for it like kind of right away? And that feels, there's something about leaving a 10 million player on your bench for a game week that feels kind of silly. But
yeah, and just to clarify, leaving him on your bench for a week, it's going to be at least two game weeks. Brendan Rodgers said that it was looking like 10 days, 2 weeks before Vardy would be back on the training pitch and ready to play. So if you flash forward to maybe if there's like the Instagram training ground photo of Jamie Vardy with a smile on his face ahead of game week 22, where they play Fulham, and you still happen to have Jamie Vardy. But so you're about to make the case of, you shouldn't at that point still have him on your bench because that's just money rotting away.
Well, it's more that I wouldn't make the move this week, right? So like I said before, it depends on your situation. If you have a Man City defender or two or whatever, I think that, fair enough. Just like burn four, take out Vardy, and we can talk about Vardy alternatives in a second. I just, in my particular case, I think that I'm prioritizing a Man City defender over Vardy, and then I will transfer him out going into game week 21. Right. Yeah. So that's all I mean is like, it feels weird to have a 10 million player for even one game week, and it's not that I'm like planning to keep him through the hernia surgery or whatever. It's just that I don't know that burning eight really makes the most sense because I have plenty of players that I can play and start this game week.
So Josh, I could be in a situation in which I have a 5.1 million goalkeeper on my bench this week. So you don't talk to me about wasting money.
5.1? Is that all that Mendy is? It's crazy that he's not more expensive.
It is kind of crazy. But he's definitely, is he performing up to a $5.1 million keeper? Unclear to me. Unclear.
Yeah, that's true. He looked that way at the start. He still looks good. I mean, but that, the whole, the Chelsea thing, that's like, I feel like we like have done a lot of pods where we just like go off target and start talking about Chelsea.
Luckily, Chelsea just isn't even a place that we need to go right now. Though, spare a thought for Timo Werner. We are chief members of the We Want Timo to Succeed in the Premier League. He has gotten every chance he has gotten in the last month. He is absolutely blown in a monumental way, even missing a pen at the end of that FA Cup match. I feel for you, man. I feel for
he you. Might be. Yeah. Like he's going to get Lampard fired, like it's kind of like it may not, he may not improve until there's somebody new leading Chelsea. Yeah. Right. All right. So as far as forward alternatives to Vardy go, I think that Kane is the obvious pick. Obvious for multiple reasons. One, because he's been great all season. He's super consistent. If he's not the, you know, he is at the very least a perfect vice captain. He is a player that you can always vice captain a match because he just constantly plays, right? And he either gets severely injured or he plays. Like he is never like he never has like a minor complaint that keeps him out for a while. So and they also have Spurs have a makeup match to play still, home to Aston Villa. So
they have a weird fixture list coming up. So it's Liverpool, as we've mentioned, in 20, followed by Brighton away. Fine. Chelsea, West Brom home in 23. Pretty good. Followed by Manchester City. It's kind of like, if you're with Spurs assets as I am, I currently have Kane and Son. We're going to have to ride a bit of a roller coaster for the next month or so. And it actually could go very well. I think Spurs have shown this season where they can get into a groove of form and score goals against the best of opponents. So it's going to be a really interesting run here for Spurs assets.
Yeah. I mean, you would think that Chelsea might be a team that would play into their trap, right? And like give them opportunities to score counterattacking goals. I think the Liverpool, give me Kane against some of those Liverpool center backs, right? Brighton, obviously, that's just they're just bad, so it doesn't really matter. And then West Brom, obviously, too. I mean, I think West Brom have conceded the most goals from headers so far in the season. So then you're like, well, would you not bring in Kane because he's got Man City in game week 24? You know, like that seems way too far away. So I think he's one player. I think that Gabriel Jesus to me is just DOA. I wouldn't really consider him. What about Antonio and going a little cheaper?
Yeah, so that was my decision heading into 19. Do you go Antonio? But in weighing Mikel Antonio, I went back to Aston Villa and look at the fixtures coming up for Villa. Burnley, Southampton, West Ham, Arsenal, Brighton, Leicester, Leeds. It's not bad. It's not bad. And it was interesting watching Watkins against Newcastle. He clearly understands that
you've fallen into the Watkins trap, Brandon.
I have. Yeah. But he's kind of like forming for himself a really good debut season, but he kind of lost all of his momentum. And I think watching him against Newcastle, you could see a player who was just fighting to keep that form and keep that rep. So I don't know. I'm reading these fixtures for Villa. They're classic fixtures that look good on paper, but when you stop and think about them, are they actually good? Burnley, Southampton, West Ham, Arsenal, all these defenses aren't terrible.
No, I don't think they're bad. They're okay.
Some of them are quite good.
You're right. None of them are great. Villa have a lot of creative midfielders. I mean, this is one thing we knew going into the season. They had midfielders, and then in fact, they have more good midfielders than we realized, right? I think that, you want to talk about a differential. Apparently, Traore is going to keep doing what he's doing all season, right? I mean, there was sort of this feeling that he was like a fill-in spot player. Yeah, for Barkley. But then he's just been quite good, really beginning around game week. I mean, I don't even know. Like, you go back to
he's the Mason Mount of Aston Villa, Josh.
Yeah, he is. He's cheap, and he rarely gets you like a massive return, but 4 goals and 2 assists. Barkley, I didn't think had a great match in Newcastle. I thought he was a little slow on the ball.
Well, I think, I don't want to dwell on Aston Villa for much longer, but I think the encouraging thing watching Barkley was he didn't have a great match, but he looked sharp, and he looked confident. Like, there were a few tricks and flicks that he was putting on where you're like, okay, Barkley, he's in the right place. You know, he showed up at the right match, and that's good. And if you think about Villa at their absolute peak at some point this season, it was when Grealish and Barkley were kind of doing their thing in full flow. So I think I'm with you that the fact that Villa do have as creative and they have some depth in that midfield does offer a lot of opportunities to unlock Ollie Watkins. So that's fine. But then Antonio,
The way I viewed Antonio, I admit, was incorrect because it is the classic Diego Costa has four yellow cards perspective.
Right.
I was like,
right.
And it's kind of like Antonio is always on four yellow cards in that his hamstring is on four yellow cards. It could just pop at any moment. And that terrifies me. But yeah. That's not really a way in which you can play a fantasy game. You have to take what's in front of you. And I think Antonio is just as good a pick as Ollie Watkins. Could you tell me, Josh, that he's a better pick than Watkins right now?
Well, to be honest, if I could have one over the other, I would pick Antonio over Watkins. Yeah, I would. I think that Antonio is a better player. I think he's a little more savvy. I think that he's a little more central to what West Ham do. I don't know that West Ham really have much of an attack without Antonio, whereas Watkins is just one of many players who can be involved in the Aston Villa attack. So
I was just so freaked when they sold Sebastian Haller, and I don't know why, because that kind of ensured that Antonio would play. But yeah, as you're saying, like, what defines the West Ham attack? And
yeah,
I'm not sure what that is.
Yeah, I mean, I thought like Fornals was decent too. Yeah, I mean, I guess they would just throw a midfielder up there if something happened to Antonio. I mean, that's what they did with him, right? And it worked. Mm-hmm. So I guess
sure.
that would.
Yeah, that's a good yeah. point.
So yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's interesting. I mean, there's the next question here is from FPL Tips, and he asked, who are the best three forwards to have? What is the optimal forward line to have currently? And you know, I we're starting to answer this a little bit, but if I was just on a wild card right now, like let's say that you and I were wild carding going into game week 20, who are the three forwards that you would want to have in a wild card going to game week 20?
It's a tough one because I feel like all of the key forwards are a bit out of form right now. So Bamford, I feel like Bamford is under consideration.
Yep.
He's done well enough to his price is up to 6.7. And then if you're on Wildcard and don't already have him, that's a price where you start to be like, I don't know. Yeah. But I do think the way Leeds play, if Leeds can kind of recover from their dip in form, it's got to be Bamford. Yeah. Bamford, Antonio, and Kane, I guess, would be the three I'd go for.
It's a weird like thing for them because I feel like they barely played in the last month. You know, they didn't have a match in game week. That half game week 18, you know, mm-hmm. and it feels like, and then they had the their double canceled because of Shrewsbury, and so, yeah, it feels like they haven't really had a time. Like, they're going to have a ton of matches to get their form back, and so I think it will be really, really interesting. I mean, away to Newcastle, that could do it. Away to Leicester, I'm not sure I guess you'd probably expect them to blank in that one, although it could be mm-hmm. an interesting match. I think I'd still go for Bamford. Especially if you had him in your team already, I think that's a factor too, because his price has risen so much. I mean, I think at 6.7 million, maybe he's less appealing, you know, if you bought him at 5.8 or something like mm-hmm. that, I would hold on to him because they do have that double coming up and their fixtures, I don't think are too bad, but yeah, just straight up. If I didn't have either one and I was just buying one, I really honestly would strongly consider Antonio just because his price is so so much lower. And as I mentioned before, he's just so central to their attack and clearly he's in good form, right? I mean, he had, you know, two goals in two matches. Now, granted, that was, you know, one of those was home to West Brom, but he looked good. I mean, did you, you know, I assume you watched the West Ham, yeah. you know, West Brom match. And he had like led this incredible break too. And, you know, nothing came from it in the end, but I mean, you know, it's too bad because he just really struggles to stay healthy. But it's also like I was annoyed that I didn't bring him in, but I find him impossible not to like.
Mm-hmm.
He's just such a like he's just likable. You know,
does a yeah. backstroke as a goal celebration, you're going to like that player. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. What have you heard these rumors about Danny Ings agitating at Southampton for a move?
No, I hadn't seen that.
Then I shouldn't perpetuate them. It sounded odd to me. Like he seems like maybe he's really set on Champions League football, and I think he recognizes that he's in the over the last two seasons, he's in the form of his life, and
right.
he can only stay this healthy for so long.
Right.
But
take the team that nurtured you and
It basically got you into that form. But, you know, the fixtures are okay for Southampton. And it does look like Danny Ings is healthy again. I don't know. Yeah. He's an interesting one. We could go down the list of forwards, but which we won't. But Ings does jump out at me as a sword, that type of a sword pick.
Right. And Ings, 6.9% ownership. So, you know, quite low. And I assume that's even lower, honestly, among the top 100K or so. He is fully recovered from COVID, played 80 plus minutes at the weekend. So I think that he's definitely, I think that's a really interesting shout, especially for, like you said, more of a differential pick. I think that it is really interesting, isn't it? I guess I would just go Kane because of the consistency. I think that he's worth the price because you just kind of know what you're going to get from him. Like, you just are rarely going to get a long run of blanks from him because he'll just get a penalty, or he'll, you know, assist somebody, or he'll score in a corner, or, you know, it's just like, there's just so many different ways for Kane to accrue points, especially when you factor in how well he's passing this year. And so I think that I think at that price, I think he's worth it. I don't really go into the, like, I wouldn't pay X amount of dollars for a player I wouldn't be consistently captaining. I just don't really buy that logic. What I'm looking for are consistent returns, and I don't really think about whether I'm going to captain that player or not. And Kane is about as consistent as it gets. And he kind of was for years and years. And then just the last couple of years, he fell off a little bit. So I would definitely go Kane. And then you're just in a sludge of players, right?
Well, how quickly we've forgotten about Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He's back. Right. He scored in the FA Cup this weekend. James Rodriguez played, got two assists this weekend. Everton could be back, but that is, you get into lots of ifs, ands, maybes, and that's why I would be hesitant to wildcard at this point, because you've got players like DCL and Ings who could come into form and be really key. Like, DCL's ownership was at some point astronomically high. It's all the way back down to like 25%. It's still high, but he could be a big
in there too.
Totally. And, you know, he could be an advantage if you hold on to your wild card there and move on those players that could come back into form in a month from now.
And he has two matches to make up, right? So if you bring in DCL now, not only do you get him for, like you said, you know, back, scored today. They've got a pretty good run coming up, and then he has two matches to make up as well. So you're going to get doubles out of him too. It feels a little early to me to bring him in, but it's part of the appeal of bringing in someone like Gundogan as that KDB replacement is. It's actually, you're probably going to end up with a few million left in your bench no matter who you bring in. So that's, you know, maybe at some point you bring in an Ings or a Calvert-Lewin, to replace Watkins. Like, Watkins to me, I'm just not sold. This is the second time I've had him on my squad now, and I just find him a little frustrating. The decision making feels like it's not quite there. He struggles to stay onside.
He should have had at least two goals against Newcastle, and I agree. He personally fell short of where he should have been in that match.
Yeah, and it's like you said, he's like Shea Adams last year. He was better than Adams was last year, but he's in that mode where you just kind of feel like he hasn't quite put it together yet. There's no, you know, that's totally reasonable, but it does make me, it turns me off him a little bit. At his price, you can kind of put up with it, but I think if I had an extra 1.5 million or so, I would go for DCL or Ings just to get the consistency.
So we are agreed currently. The optimal front line is Kane, Bamford, and Antonio.
Wow. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, when you put it that way, I'm almost like I should just do a 4-4-2 or something, you know? Like, that third spot doesn't feel like it's
necessary.
Yeah. It just depends on what happens with Everton and Southampton, I guess.
But yeah, okay, so I think this is kind of plays into the next question we have from Jay Stallman, wildcard advice.
Yeah.
And formation is something you have to consider when you're on a wildcard. And I think if you're anticipating some of these strikers we were just mentioning coming back from injury or COVID and getting into form, you don't want to put yourself in a Rian Brewster situation where you can't get a third striker if you want one or need one. So like the 4-4-2, that one always frightens me.
Yeah, you're right, because I think that's what always throws me off the 4-4-2 is just that feeling of like, you really, if you're going to do the 4-4-2, I feel like you have to just accept that it's not going to be, it's more like a semi-permanent 4-3-3, or I mean a semi-permanent like a 4-4-2 that's going to shift into a 4-3-3 at times, right? Sort of depending on whether Souček or the player you've got has a better fixture. Because I think, I think you also just commit to spending like $6 million on that spot. And so whether, but maybe that's okay. Maybe it's fine. Like, you know, if you've got Gundogan and some Leeds players and some Aston Villa players, some West Ham players, like maybe you just have enough money that you can do that. And it's just like a mental thing you've got to get over, you know, like you having a Mendy on your bench, you know, it's like, it's just a thing that happens that's there. Yeah.
It is what it is. Yeah. Easiest wildcard advice for me is the starting point is two Man City defenders.
Yep.
Do you want to get into the whole triple city defense argument? I don't find it to be super interesting. It's just kind of like, if you want to do it. If you don't.
Yeah. Feels like a lot. I don't know. Yeah. Like, yeah. And I guess Cancelo would be the third player you'd have. Like, so you have to sweat every single lineup, like praying that this is the match he starts. Like, it feels very stressful.
Yeah, I mean, you could do the most boring thing imaginable, like me, and put Ederson in goal. That's a workaround,
right? Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's so expensive, but maybe that is the way to go. So, and so the other players on a wild card. I mean, I guess I would be looking at the players have double game weeks ahead still, right? And so Aston Villa have two. So that makes it easy. I would definitely have, I would have Grealish 100% on a wild card. I think that.
And Martinez for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, two double game weeks to come and a bunch of easy fixtures in the next, not easy, but like fixtures where they should keep a handful of clean sheets in the next few matches. Everton, I think I would. At least seriously consider DCL on a wild card, just to be a little bit different. I mean, what about like a Burnley defender? Are we undervaluing them a little bit? They've got a game in hand at home to Fulham. Nick Pope has been kind of back to being awesome again.
Sure.
Clean sheets.
I've already mentioned Ederson and Martinez, two great goalkeepers, but then there's Nick Pope. But I'm just trying to... I feel like the way the money works with Burnley right now is if Charlie Taylor can get back fit or you have the option of somebody like Loughton, I would just prefer the cheapest possible route into the Burnley defense, whether it's Pope or a fullback or a center back, just as cheap as you can get away with it in terms of guaranteeing starts.
Yeah, I know. It's really a bummer that Taylor went off, and I feel like now I have to probably drop him. I'll always have his assist, Brandon. He got an assist at
You'll
Wolves. Yeah, exactly. I got one return out of him before he got injured. And then otherwise, I mean, we just talked about the ideal forward, so I think that we kind of answered that question. And then in the midfield, I think the one thing I would think about in the midfield is I would consider a Man United double up with Fernandez and Rashford. I thought Rashford looked incredible today, and maybe he just needed that little bit of rest to I don't know, get his energy back or something. He just played so beautifully in this match, and I just think that maybe he'd be one to consider.
Mohamed Salah. You're on a wild card. You're faced with this decision.
Yeah.
This is the defining moment of this week's episode, Josh. We're playing our imaginary wild cards, and we have to reveal to each other, did we or did we not put Mo Salah in our wild card?
You know, I guess I would. It's just because of that whole sword versus shield debate. And I don't know. I mean, for me, I'm just not ready to give up on him. I mean, I should be. I don't know what it's going to be 25 blanks or something before it finally happens. But I think the brace that he scored yesterday shows, I don't know. I don't like to drop players who just scored a brace. I don't care what match it was in. You know, yeah. that's just sort of usually a sign that their form is going to come back. He actually almost had a hat trick too. Yeah. Dean Henderson was, you know, played pretty well in the match. So I Salah stays reluctantly. I certainly would not consider Sadio Mane, who's really been in poor form.
Yeah, I was following this thread on Reddit earlier today where they were talking about the idea of, well, yeah, Salah is a season keeper and undroppable, but the way you play the fantasy game is you're meant to move assets in and out based on their form. You get Salah when he's in form, and then you drop him when he's out of form, and that's how you win FPL. But Salah is that type of player where it's even though it's five blanks in a row, it is still match by match, week by week for him in terms of when he will or will not destroy you.
Yeah.
In fantasy. And the idea that you can jump on and off Salah methodically and with any sort of purpose, I just don't believe you can do that. You can't predict it.
No, and he just got his rest too, you know, so I think that he's kind of set for a while now, you know.
Well, the concern I would have there with the rest game with him and him getting his rest is you're in a situation with Liverpool where is Salah not playing because of rest, because of fitness, or is it because of form, or because Klopp actually needs to do something else with the team to get things going? Now, the idea that Salah wouldn't have anything to say about that, that he wouldn't actually be part of the plan on the pitch, is kind of silly on its face, but I don't know.
I mean, I would take Salah's form over Firmino's and Sadio Mane's, you know? I mean, if anyone's going to get dropped for form, I'd say it's those two who are more liable. I mean, the only forward who was really looking good this year was Jota, you know, and, you know, Klopp played him in a dead rubber and he got a knee injury and it kind of cost them the Premier League season, it seems like. So, I think we've gone all around on the wild card stuff. Final question is from Salil. He says, what are some of the things you consider when taking a point hit for an extra transfer? That's a good question.
Yeah, it is a good question. I guess I consider how long I want this player. The idea that you spend a point hit just to get somebody in for one game week, and you're relying on that points hit being paid back within 1 week. And I think that's the hardest one to pull off. So if you're thinking about spending points to get more transfers in, are these players that, you want around for the rest of the season or for the next month because you like the string of four or five fixtures? There's is a greater likelihood of them paying you back for that. So it's kind of longevity for me is item number one as far as points hits go.
Yeah, I think longevity, I think how highly owned the players are. Like sometimes you just have to bite the bullet and just bring in somebody who is doing super well and you just don't have them in your team and there's just no way to bring them in without burning points. And I think in those cases it's justified. I mean, it's like, it's always like how many times, I know both of us have been in this position a bunch where there's someone who's doing incredibly well and you just like can't figure out how to bring them into your team. And so they just kind of keep doing well and you just keep not having them.
Yeah.
And you're like, if I just burned 4 8 weeks ago, I'd be on 37 more points than I am right now. Yep. And that's a little bit where I am right now with my team, where I am considering a -8 just to like set myself up and solve all three of my problems right now. And I don't think I'll ultimately do it. And the reason why is because I feel like I have enough quality defenders for this game week that I'm just going to take my chances and try to get away with not having a defender. I mean, like they could keep clean sheets in all of those matches. That is a thing that could happen, but so could other players that are not Man City defenders, you know? And so there's this idea sometimes that you have to, like you can get a clean sheet lots of different ways, you know, like you have from different players that are not just, you know, the player on Man City. So that's
most galling when you take a -4 is when you see that the player that you had before the -4 did just as well, if not better. Right. So one thing you do have to consider is, are you burning the points just because you want a player who you don't have? what about the player you're getting rid of? Like, is it a minus four becomes way more appealing to me when I know the player I'm getting rid of for a minus four has a red flag. They're definitely not playing,
yeah.
or they yeah. don't have a fixture or whatever, then fine, get rid of them. But yep. if there is any potential upside with the player that you're burning points to get rid of, I would say stop and consider the fact that you might be being a little impatient.
Yeah, I think yes, totally. And I typically will not remove a player for a minus four. I'm with you there. Especially a defender. I mean, this is kind of a classic rule. And this double game week for Man City was so insane. Diaz too, right? Finished on like 19 points or something, or 17, whatever it was, 18. That like it made it seem like, oh, well, like a minus four for a defender is just great because you're going to get a bunch of goals from them and, clean sheets. And the best you get is 2 points, right? You get, yeah. you get the, their 6 point return and you get, which I guess goes back to what you were saying about the long term. Like if you just have a plan and you just want to be done thinking about bringing this player in, you don't want to have to, you don't want to blow your game week 22 transfer because mm-hmm. I have it just earmarked for this player. You just want to be done with it now. This is actually, there was something, I can't remember when I did it. There was some move earlier on this season where I didn't take a minus four. And I really should have, because it was just like the beauty of taking the minus four is that it's just done, And so you just don't have to do it anymore. It's like, it's minus four. You're going to score 2000 plus points this season. It is not going to, you will not win, very likely. You very likely will not win or lose a mini league based on how many points hits you took in a one game week, right? So sometimes it is better, I think, just to be done with it. And then you can just get on with other transfers later on.
There's that line in Fight Club where Ed Norton's character is talking about his couch. And he's just like, I was in this mind frame of, I needed to fill up my apartment with all this crap from Pottery Barn. And that couch, like, I knew no matter what happened at work or elsewhere, if it was bad or good, I just had that couch thing already taken care of and I didn't have to think about it anymore.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's what we're talking about
that's
here.
That's what Ruben Diaz is right now. He's just a really well-made couch.
Yeah. a sectional, right. Even.
Yeah. Ruben Diaz is a sectional couch. I think that's well phrased, Brandon. And now we need our friend Danny Boyle, who did a couple of great images with quotes this week to draw that up. And Brandon, that's the podcast. Again, game week 19 kicks off in like probably about 36 hours mm-hmm. from the time you're listening to this podcast, depending on when you listen. So really fast turnaround time. And try to, if you make a transfer this week, think about who Man City are playing. They're playing West Brom, and really give serious consideration to bringing in a player from Man City for your transfer this week. Brandon, do you want to thank our producer patrons?
Oh my God, yes. Every week we love to thank our producers. Big thanks to Trevor Ingerson, Mike DiPietro, Chris Howell, Andy Penn, Martin Savage, Brian T., to Big Gaffer, Bobas Kuhn, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, James Holland, Jazz Binning, Dave Wagner, Lodahl, Nick Wright, Jim Payne, Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson, Travis West, Victor Forberg Skoging, Paul Herzig, Kaya Christine Lalang, Andy Portlock, Toothless Gibbon, Lindsay Rostel, Anton Markov, at FPL Merch, Kerry Swanson, Kieran Screeton, Francis Mann, Chris Carter, Blue Nose Stew, Mikey Uwang, Bruce Kerr, Nicholas Vernadakis, Sam Schauer, Will Husby, Rich Evans, Bobby Stiles, and the Future Media Group FPL. If you want to become a producer or support the cheaters at any level, just visit us at patreon.com/alwayscheating to find out how you can get more cool FPL content from me and Josh. And also don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the Always Cheating podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on social media, wherever it is you get your social media. Email us, hailcheaters@gmail.com. Visit our website for all this information and more. That website, Josh, what is it?
Alwayscheating.com.
It's so easy to remember. It's the name of the podcast with .com at the end of it.
All right. Well, thanks to everybody for listening. Good luck at midweek. We'll be back with a Patreon podcast at midweek. And then we'll be back with a regular podcast next Sunday. We'll have 3 game weeks to digest on next Sunday's podcast, Brennan. That is kind of... Wait, no, just 2. Just 2. But it's still
like 3.
2. Yeah, it feels like 3. It's 2 still a lot. All right. Well, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Poku forever.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.